And welcome back. This is the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor. With me is Phil Conlon. And Phil, we haven't given you much chance to jump into this, but I think you and I want to talk about some of this news to do with Canada's policy and U.S. policy on China. I'd start off by saying that we're entering, and we've warned people about this on the Taylor Report, it's now reached a fever pitch, xenophobia and demagoguery on the part of Ottawa, certainly Washington. You get the United States Congress passing resolutions on Hong Kong and on the so-called Uyghur question. 360-1. I'd love to meet the one. I assume it's might be Tulsi Gabbard, but the fact is that they've turned so dramatically. If we remember when Justin Trudeau came into office, he actually thought, "Well, okay, this is not a bad situation. I have trade with the United States. I've got trade with China." And this is, you know, both of them are, the benefits, that trade is very beneficial to Canada. And I would date some of this crisis to Justin Trudeau's early visit to China, when we were all told that this was going to be a big trade visit. And he went, and it made great, what do they call that, photo ops or visuals, because he went to see the Chinese leadership, and the Canadian media was told to be ready for his announcement of a new trade agreement with China. I believe that Trump had just been elected. At any rate, he came out, and he came out alone. As you know, when one head of state meets another head of state, usually the pictures are the two of them standing together and saying, "Oh, it was a nice meeting and look forward to seeing you." He was standing there by himself. And the question was, "What is there a new trade agreement?" And he said, "No, not quite. We're still working on that." And then he came home. That was a very stark moment. And I don't see people revisiting it. But it was very striking, because the whole atmosphere was, yes, we're going to go over and get a trade agreement, and it was going to benefit Canada. And a lot of people wanted that agreement. And then they said, no. So then a few months went by, and then the other shoe dropped, which is, we're going to have a trade war with China, announced by Trump himself. It's going to be a trade war. And he also said, trade wars are easy to win. But you know, trade wars, of course, are not wars, but they do have casualties, economic casualties. So economic casualty number one came a little later when Trump said, "I want you to arrest the financial officer of the Huawei, this wonderful, successful, advanced company that is doing business with you, Canada, from which you, Canada, are really benefiting a lot, and with whom you get along fine. Hockey Night in Canada runs the commercials. Even Don Cherry liked them. They advertised him, or he advertised them on his whatever." So Trump says, "I want you to arrest her." And they, on the, what charge had she, what crime had she committed in Canada? No crime. She was, Huawei conducts, you know, business like a lot of professionally run companies. No crime. "Well, we want you to arrest her, and you will arrest her," and Canada arrested her. And this situation has, from their spiraled downward. And instead of Canada getting a grip and deciding, no, we're not going to run errands for Trump or the Americans, we're going to look after our own best interest, became an obedient, probably always were, but this became to the world nakedly obvious that Canada was, I can't avoid the word, a vassal. And for 24 hours, maybe 48, CBC, CTV would bring on people who knew something about China, and they read a book or two, maybe been there, maybe read about Canadian business and the importance of trade for the survival of anybody's economy. They would ask one or two of them out of, I'd say two out of 10, said the wrong word. They asked, I remember a professor of somebody, they said, well, what do you make of this? He says, well, my question is, are we a vassal? Because I don't understand why we would do that. She hasn't committed a crime here. No other country would have arrested her that I can see. We have to ask ourselves, he said, are we a vassal? He has never been, I haven't seen him since. But I want to thank him for being a wonderful bookmark in the time frame of this, because the subject of being a vassal has disappeared. Now we are the injured party. We are being bullied, not by Trump, who gave us the orders, but by China, who, subsequent to the arrest of Meng Wanzhou, China, and this, here's my interpretation of how the two Canadians, they're called the two Michaels, were taken into custody in China. Each of them has a curious history. One Michael ran a tour business into North Korea. According to the Twitter account of a Globe and Mail reporter, the two are friends. The second Michael works for the International Crisis Group. He's sometimes described as, most often described as former diplomat. The description of him in the Star and the Globe when he first was arrested in China was that he was to gather information in these countries on behalf of the US, of the Canadian embassy, but he quit the job at the Canadian embassy. I always thought this was very interesting. He's a diplomat. He stops being a diplomat in China and goes to work for the International Crisis Group, which is somewhat notorious in the world, not in Canada where it's loved, or the United States where it's loved, or Britain where it's loved, or France where it's loved, but the rest of the world says, who are these guys? Because they come into the country and they tend to write reports that are not flattering about the country that they're in. The name, of course, associated with the International Crisis Group most famously is Mr. Soros, because he's the original founder of the International Crisis Group. I thought it was interesting. That was December. I'm losing track of the year. Was it what? Was it
2018. It's going on 2 years now.
We're going on 2 years. So they were arrested, this the Michael who worked for the International Crisis Group, by the way, he's called a senior advisor. So you go from what to senior? How do you get? He was there in working for the crisis group, I don't know how long, but he was a senior advisor. I assume that's a pretty good pay grade. And in the spring of 2019, George Soros appeared at the famous Davos gathering. You know the Davos gang, Phil? You're aware of Davos?
Oh, yeah. I'm still waiting for my invitation. They haven't asked me to come over yet.
Yeah, we never... to get an invitation to Davos, you have to either be a hireling or a guy with a lot of dough. Oh, well, there's a lot of government people. They go to it. Actually, China went. in the spring of 2019, China was represented at Davos. Soros was there, and he gave a speech in which he said, the worst dictator and most dangerous man on the planet was President Xi of China. That is after his man, Michael, I shouldn't call him his man, but a guy who works for the International Crisis Group, was picked up. He did not mention the arrest of the two Canadians, but I thought, I don't think you're really helping matters, since your employee or a guy employed by an organization that you help finance is in a jackpot, and you call the leader of the country where he's in a jackpot the most dangerous leader on the planet. But that wasn't reported. We're talking about it on the Taylor Report, but it struck me as significant. The explanation of why they were picked up, in my opinion, is that in every country, there are people from other countries who are regarded as dubious by the police. And if you have good relations with a country, you say, okay, so-and-so is dubious, but we get along with the leader, so forget about it. Don't worry about it. You know, somebody says, hey, you know, the guy was over here today and he was taking down a lot of information. We just thought we should tell you. And they say, that's okay. We get along with them. No problem. So, but when you drop an anvil on the other guy's foot, that is, you arrest Meng Wanzhou, somebody picks up the phone and says, give me that list of dubious people. You know, I'm not suggesting anybody did anything. I'm just saying that they do keep lists, you understand? And I'll tell you one that illustrates it. You know the famous writer Dahl, Roald Dahl?
Yes.
It's not talked about, but he was a spy.
Yeah.
And who he was spying on? In World War II, at the end of the war, he was spying on the United States. He said that he was given the job of making nice with Claire Booth Luce, the wife of the editor of Time. The editor of Time was away and ignoring Claire, so she took up with Dahl. And Dahl wrote to his handlers that he couldn't stand the woman and he wanted her off the job. But they said, no, we want you to keep cultivating her because we want some stuff on him. Our listeners to understand, you know, this is a program for grown-ups. Spying goes on in the world, you understand? And Roald Dahl told us how he did it and how he called that nasty work, but he on behalf of the company, his company, not the CIA, but the British intelligence, they were spying on the Americans. And I don't know if they do that anymore. I know the Americans spy the other way. Anyway, this is a long way around to saying Canada is in a mess because it's a vassal. And it's leading us into a situation where we have two American leaders, Biden and Trump, whose odor is equally noxious around the world, and who are Biden, in the case of the Obama administration, he said, we're gonna pivot toward China, that is confront them. And Trump is really just following on that. But for Canada, this is gonna be a rough trip. And we do not discuss it here. As you know, Phil, in the Canadian Parliament, the NDP is probably more nasty about China than the Conservatives. They kind of compete in saying nasty things about China. We don't have a peace party. Even the New Greens, they're not peace. They don't say, well, wait a minute, before we start talking about harassing them on the issue of their treatment of minorities, maybe we ought to consider whether we want good relations and whether we want trade before we start lecturing. The party that says, look, peace is very important. And trade wars lead to real wars. And we therefore object to the policies of our government. Even the Green Party, who now has a new leader, could not utter those words. And even Dmitry, whom we all admire, who fought the good fight, he found himself wobbling when the issue of Hong Kong was raised. He decided he ought to talk about the human rights issues of Hong Kong, which are actually none of his business, particularly since we're talking about using an issue to create more trouble. It's one thing to say, well, you know, we would ask questions and all that, but you'd also wait and listen to hear the answer. You wouldn't say, we need to have trade embargo. So everybody's found an excuse to attach themselves to the American war wagon. Everybody, Green, NDP, Conservative, Bloc, Liberal. You know, actually, the only wavering is in the Liberal Party, where the Cretan wing of the party didn't agree with any of this. It's generally assumed that Cretan would have told them no on arresting Meng Wanzhou. Clearly, the people who were ambassadors and whatnot are now considered pariahs in Canada are these former Liberal individuals associated with Cretan, who said, you know, really, we ought to return Meng Wanzhou. They are being beaten, browbeaten by the members of parliament and whatnot. So this is the situation, which I don't see anybody altering. I don't see there's more in the U.S. political spectrum produces more people that have a few doubts about the policy than we have here, I have to say. We probably should mention in relation to this, the indigenous matter in Canada. We have, once again, all of our treaties are being exposed as lies to indigenous people. We make a promise and believe it and swear to it until it's time to decide who gets the most lobster or who gets the most oil or who gets the most land. Then we're suddenly, we change our policy. And here we are with lobster, indigenous lobster fishermen carrying out their rights under the law, having things destroyed, burned. And Bob Rae, our new UN ambassador, is going off to the United Nations where he's going to lecture China about its treatment of minorities. And I would say he ought not to be able to open his mouth until the indigenous rights of indigenous peoples of Canada are respected and guaranteed and carried out, not once again promised. I think we're near the end of time. You tell me, Phil.
Well, I think we have about 3 or 4 more minutes to develop that tone. And I look forward to seeing Bob Rae speaking in all earnestness about the human rights in other countries while we have people burning the product of the lobster fishermen and while the police stand by with their arms folded and smirk about it. I mean, it's a good time to not talk about other people's human rights, it would strike me.
Well, it's certainly a reminder. I can remember him visiting Grassy Narrows. Yes. As far as I know, it's still a mess, isn't it?
Well, and it's funny you mentioned that. This week, there is a native community north of Thunder Bay that had to be evacuated because they have not had potable water for 25 years. And they have a little pump that gets them a little bit, but that broke down. And they couldn't even get the federal government to admit that having no water was an emergency. Then they said, oh, you're right, it's an emergency. So they evacuated the community to Thunder Bay, where you know they're probably not all that welcome when they get there. And that's the state of native treatment of our native communities by the federal government that wants to talk about human rights elsewhere in the world.
Yeah, well, they talk about Ambassador Bob. Yeah. I gotta call him, you know, Ambassador Running Mouse. He's going off, and he really does have a high horse. I mean, he's talking all about, he talks about Myanmar. And all, by the way, it's part and parcel of a NATO program. He it really represents the aggressive alliance of NATO, because when these criticisms are made of other countries, the implication is they have to be overthrown. They have to agree or be overthrown. They have to have sanctions. They have to be denied things. They have to be hurt. The arguments, the implication and logic of the position put by Bob Rae, and of course in behalf, on behalf of the Canadian government, is to hurt other states. But you would see whining like a siren if other countries said, well, we've decided to stop trading with Canada because of the way they treat Indigenous people.
That's just too wonderful to imagine. The howl of outrage you would see from the Globe and Mail. Shouldn't mix politics with trade.
No, exactly. And remember, and apropos of this, Bolivia, when Morales was overthrown, Canada didn't turn a hair. But now, bless their hearts, the Bolivians have restored the party of Morales to power. And all this while, Canada did nothing but engage in a conspiracy, not one, but several in South America, to remove democratic governments like Morales. But they also, of course, are busy trying to overthrow the government of Venezuela. The new Bolivian government, the returning democratic government of Bolivia, says that they, of course, are restoring relations with Venezuela and with China and with Iran. That's a fact. And as I say, this is a program for adults, not people who were, you know, running fevers and behaving childishly. This is a very good development. Here's the magic word for Bolivia, lithium. Morales said that he was overthrown because he intended to nationalize the lithium, guarantee it against the capture by foreign entities, companies, whereas the coup makers said they were going to privatize the lithium, a very important item in Bolivia's economy. So keep your eye on that issue, on what happens, because imperialists become violently angry when you actually put your hand on things that they think are theirs. Ask Fidel Castro about the King Ranch in Texas. He says, we're nationalizing the King Ranch and the United Fruit Company, and the Americans went berserk to overthrow him. But anyway, bless the Bolivians. This has been the Taylor Report. Hey, Phil, thank you very, very much. And we thank, of course, Ann Garrison, and our anonymous technician did a brilliant job. This is Taylor Report. See you again next week.